Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And here we are, Iceman Insights, the Dirty D. Michael Shockley, 96.9 FM, WYIR, the music bomb. I like that. Now give me a moment to set the stage here. Everything looks wonderful. The Iceman, last two games, Fort Wayne 2 weeks ago. They win them both. They get on a bus. They head down to sunny FLA. And you're thinking, this is perfect. And then crazy thing after crazy thing happens. And this is how Hollywood writes horror stories.
Yeah.
That just, you know, a bunch of people, a bunch of guys, a bunch of girls getting together. They're off to some fun place and they're going to enjoy their time and everything is happy. And then Jason in a goalie mask strikes. And that's about what we had on this trip as far as injuries and call-ups and everything else. So what a week for the Iceman.
Yeah, it's
and sickness.
Yeah, it's been a very odd last couple weeks, and it's kind of been a microcosm of this entire season. But it's really come to a halt in the last week. The craziness of how things have gone this year. Iceman obviously, went to Florida for three games: one in Orlando, two in Fort Myers against the Florida Everblades, and escaped with a 2-1 trip.
Yeah, and that just speaks volumes about the club and their character.
Yeah, exactly. 2-1 on the trip, 4-1-0 in the last five overall. And it started on Wednesday in Orlando with a 6-1 loss, which was obviously ugly based on the score, but reportedly part of the reason why they lost that game so badly was that a number of the players were throwing up in the locker room before the game because there was a bug going around. So
not to mention Nathan Moon pulled off the bus
to be reassigned. Yeah,
and so, didn't someone get pulled right before the team left? Someone got pulled off.
That was when Vogelhuber got called up.
Vogelhuber got called up, and then Moon gets called. So two core guys right before the first game of the trip are pulled off the
good
bus.
Good luck, Crom, filling these holes with no time, and you're on the road. 6-1 loss in Orlando. The only goal for the Iceman was by Andre Bouvet-Morissette in his first game with the team. More about him in a minute. A few minutes. In that game, 6-1 loss, Todd Robinson was -4 and is now down, or up, depending on your perspective,
down
to -35 on the season, which is dead last among all 868 skaters in the ECHL. Somehow, though, in that game, you lose a game 6-1, but Daniel Tatro and Anton Blomqvist were +1.
Yep.
That's impressive. I'm not real sure how that happens.
Sometimes that's lucky bounces. Sometimes it's just you're just playing really well.
Sometimes it's lucky as far as which forward lines you get paired with throughout the course of a game.
Not to give away the spoiler, but I think Tatro gives a few of them pluses back before this trip's over.
Yeah, I think he was a -3 on Friday, even though we won that game.
Exactly. So that's just the way it works.
It evens out over the course of time. But, ugly 6-1 loss in Orlando. Everybody's sick. Just throw that one away and move on. And, boy, did the Iceman. Friday the 22nd won 5-4 in Fort Myers against the Everblades, the defending champion Everblades. And that game was decided in an absolute marathon of a shootout. It went 21 rounds, which is just insane. Paul Dayton made 28 saves in regulation. We got goals from Stefan Delarvere, Tatro, Matt Krug, and Jason Dale. Kenny, Kevin, R2-D2 Baker had two assists again. But
he's really starting to fire up here at the end of the season.
Yeah, he's playing really well. The 21-round shootout ties the league record, which was set back in 1992. It also blew away the NHL record. It was only 15 rounds. And because it was such a long shootout, it actually made national news. Yahoo's Puck Daddy blog, which was introduced to the Iceman by way of linking to me, covered the Iceman again with a full-on blog entry about about the incredible shootout. The thing that was really amazing about the shootout was it was dominated by the goalies. There were 42 total shots and only 5 goals, which is just incredible. Yep. When you look at the way usually it's, you know, 20 to 30% score, and that was only about 10%. So the goalies both played really well. Dayton made 19 saves on 21 shooters, which is a new record for saves in a single shootout. And Pat Nagel for Florida, that bum, only made 18 saves. So it was a incredible thing. It was 1-1 after 5 rounds. Then there were a few scoreless rounds. Both teams scored in the 10th round. And then they went 10 straight rounds without anyone scoring before finally in the 21st round, Andre Bouvet-Morissette again won it for the Icemen. Now, the interesting thing about this, the shootout, was there was some question about how exactly it worked logistically as far as players repeating and whatnot. Last year, we got used to in the CHL, the rule in the CHL was each team shoots 10 times, and then after 10 rounds, if it's still tied, you revert back to the first round and start repeating in the same order. The ECHL addresses shootout repeating completely differently. When you have a long shootout like that, one team must exhaust all of its eligible shooters before both teams start repeating. Well, by then, because of injuries and call-ups and everything, the Icemen only had 13 eligible shooters come shootout time. So once the Icemen went through all 13 shooters, then both teams were allowed to start repeating. But in the E, you don't have to repeat in the same order. So they started switching up the order from round 14 on. But the good thing was the Icemen went through 13, and then there were 8 more. And those 8 more was all 7 forwards plus Tatro. So if Bouvet-Morissette didn't score to win it in the 21st round, we would have started getting into Anton Blomqvist and Donnie Harris shooting for a second time in the shootout. So you think probably our odds might not have been very good. So it's a good thing that Bouvet-Morissette won it when he did. But that's an interesting tweak from what we were used to for the last two seasons and how the shootouts are handled. So,
did you see the Patafi post? His tweet was that he was up after Crown had him ready to go after the Zamboni driver and someone else.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Considering some of the guys that did end up shooting, that might have been an upgrade over our other options. Yeah, it was a memorable, crazy shootout. The entire video, the video of the whole shootout is on YouTube. Dixie, I think, found it and posted it on the Asylum. So if you're looking for it, you can watch that entire drama play out. I was listening to it. We were out and about, but came in the middle of the shootout and listened to about the last 10 rounds. And Ficarelli was about to have a coronary on the radio. But yeah, that was quite a wild event. But the shootout, while that got national coverage, perhaps the biggest news in that game for the Icemen was more injuries. In that game, Stefan Della Rovere did return from his concussion, but then in the same game, Mark Cody went out with a concussion. He took an elbow to the head during that game.
Isn't the proper term conky?
Yes, conky, according to Aaron Jens. But the really big news, no disrespect to Mark Cody, but the huge news in that game was that Josh Beaulieu took a skate blade to the wrist, which left a trail of blood on the ice, caused some nerve and muscle damage, also some tendon damage. I don't think the nerve damage is too bad, but the muscle and tendon required surgical repair. Went to the ER. He is out for the rest of the season. He had been the last player for the team who had played in every game this season.
Well, it just figures. Yeah, last one, you get it the worst.
You got to wipe him out. Yeah.
It starts with Oliver Gabriel getting that calf sliced open to start it all off, and then
that was a precursor for the way everything went this whole season. And Beaulieu, I'm sure that won't be the last injury the way we're going, but hopefully the worst, because that's really scary stuff. But he is out for the year. They already have put him on IR, so we won't be seeing him anymore this season. There are two players who have been healthy and with the team all year but have not played every game. Tatro missed one game. He was a casualty of the veteran limit when we were shuffling veterans in and out to try to stay legal. He only missed one game, and Jason Dale missed two games as a healthy scratch back when we had too many forwards, which is just a...
Ha, ha, ha. Remember those days?
Yeah. That seems like a pipe dream at this point, but...
So they go into Saturday night with no Mark Cody with the conky, no Josh Beaulieu. So we're almost down to minimum skaters.
Yeah, 13 skaters went into that game on Friday, or on Saturday. 13 skaters and two goalies, one of whom was an emergency backup. It's just ridiculous. But despite that, they went in and completed the sweep of the defending champions with a 5-3 victory. Paul Dayton, again, 34 saves. Once again, the Icemen led 2-0 in a game and then tried to give it away. Florida did come back. It was actually tied 3-3 late, but Dylan Clark scored the game winner with 2:18 left, and then Todd Robinson added an empty netter. Dale, Todd Robinson, Dylan Clark, and Stefan Della Rovere all ended up with a goal and assist each, and R2-D2, Kevin Baker, and Patrick Kennedy had 2 assists each. Baker now has 4 multi-point games in his last 5 games played.
I knew he was hot.
Yeah, he's red hot right now. But you wonder how his heat might change because with Beaulieu being out, that line, I don't know what the line combinations were on Saturday, but it's going to be mix and match and trying to put the puzzle pieces together in a way that will somehow work. But, yeah, the injuries continue to mount and make Rich Crom's job more difficult because – when you've got a line that's been playing well together, we had the Dale Kennedy Vogelhuber line got ripped apart because Vogelhuber got called up, and then
Kennedy got a conky.
Yeah,
that messed that up first.
Yeah, and now the Todd Beaulieu Baker line is broken up because Beaulieu's out for the year. So, going to be interesting to see how things shake out. But unfortunately, yet another injury in that game. Anton Blomqvist scored his first career goal in the first period of that game, and his reward was later in the game. He was the victim of a dirty hit, according to Crom, and sustained another concussion, which is his second of the season. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if he's done for the year because you can't play it too safe with concussions. And when you've had 2 in a single season, it's probably better to just sit out, make sure the cobwebs are all gone, and try to regroup for next season. So yet another injury to add on to the pile.
Unbelievable. A couple of things of note. What about Kevinsville? Going down to Florida, he takes in a Toronto, Florida Panthers game. I told him to keep an eye on my boy Nazem Kadri, and he did not disappoint. And then did he see all 3 Iceman games down there? I know he saw 2. Yeah, he saw 2 at least.
I don't know if he was in Orlando, but I think he was definitely for the 2 games in Florida.
Well, he was there in Orlando because he had Facebook or tweeted or something and said, "This is looking like a very scary part of town. I hope my car is here when I get back from the game."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, he was there for that as well. So, awesome road trip for a Iceman maniac,
yeah,
for sure.
There were some others. He wasn't the only one. I think there were a few other Iceman fans that were down there.
Did they go see Toronto, though?
No, probably not.
Kevinsville is where it's at.
Yeah.
I bet you those other people that went down there are the ones that start the waves. But that doesn't happen in Kevinsville. The wave does not happen in Kevinsville.
Well, that's because Kevinsville...
only good hockey.
That's because Kevinsville is a population of 1, so you can't exactly wave. Yeah,
it doesn't. Hey, as long as you're incorporated and you got a cool name like Kevinsville.
So is he the mayor?
People are going to want to come. I'm sure he is.
The mayor of Kevinsville?
Unless he likes Emperor or Czar.
I like Czar.
Yeah.
Czar's a good
Czar of yeah. Kevinsville.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to give a shout out to, and I want to, I will be participating and encouraging others to participate. Troy Seibert, whatever, however he pronounces I before E,
Troy.
Except when it sends, yeah, just Troy. But he had tweeted after Saturday night's game that what a road trip with the injuries, the call ups, the flu. Poor Ficarelli sounded. You just wanted to cuddle Ficarelli. He sounded so bad on the radio as he was fighting through that flu. You just wanted to spoon chicken noodle soup into his mouth. But Troy said, hey, when the team gets back Thursday night, we ought to give them a standing ovation.
Yeah.
Because you could, at any point in this horrible season, these guys could pack it in. And
yeah.
To go down there and beat the Everblades, they're above 500 club, 28-18-4 or whatever.
Defending champs.
And we beat them twice with 16 skaters and 13 skaters, especially after that happens to Josh. So I fully plan on participating in standing ovation for the club when they get out there Thursday night.
I think when they come out for warm-ups and then probably again when they come out at the start of the game, I think.
Well, I don't know about warm-ups because I'm not getting there that early.
I think just in general, though, people need to bring their A game on Thursday. I think this team proved over this road trip that come hell or high water, they are going to compete. And they may not have anything to play for other than pride and being a spoiler. But Yeah, they very well could have packed it in. You're in Florida. You could just be down there enjoying the sunny weather. You've got all these injuries, all this craziness happening, and yet you go down there and you go into the defending champions' barn and you take two games from them. And that's incredible. Something we should all be proud of. There's been a lot of things that I know people have been upset about this year, guys not playing as well as they think they should be, the team in general just not winning as much as we would like. But I think this road trip is proof that this team is still a team we should be proud of, regardless of the win-loss record. Because, there are a lot of teams and there are a lot of locker rooms that probably would have just imploded and fallen apart. And that Saturday game could have been ridiculously ugly. And instead, they went out and got the job done and came back with another W.
It's amazing. But regardless of how many W's we rack up, we've got a tragic number update.
Yeah, and it's getting smaller. The Icemen currently have 47 points with 15 games left, so their maximum possible point total is 77 if they went out. Currently, eighth place is Elmira, and they have 64 points through Tuesday. So since the last week, we updated this last week, we left 2 points on the table thanks to the loss in Orlando, and eighth place gained 4 points because eighth had 60 last week. Which means the tragic number has dropped by 6 from 20 to 14. So 14 points total lost by us and gained by 8th place will equal the Icemen being mathematically eliminated from playoff contention. But again, whether we're eliminated or not, the Florida trip proves this is a team that deserves your support. There's only 6 home games left, so people need to come out and cheer this team on and enjoy it for what it is and hope for better luck and less injuries next year.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to think there's only 6 home games left, Thursday and Sunday this week, and then a couple back-to-back Fridays and Saturdays in mid-March, and it's all
and
over
that's
with.
That's it. Yeah, we're only a month away from the end of the season.
Just some other stats as we think about next year and the changes that will definitely be made to this team. We are last place in our conference in goals allowed, and we are second to last in goal scoring. So you
that's
can
a bad recipe. Yeah.
that's Maple Leaf hockey right there at its finest. Yeah. But we are the worst in the league in giving up goals with 204. I can't remember what we have in goals for, but it's like a meager 152 or something like that. It's for like difference in 50 goals. You don't win a lot of games like that.
No, that's not exactly how you're going to move up in the standings. And the interesting thing about that is our power play hasn't been terrible.
Nope.
You normally would think a team that's struggling to score that much is probably going to have a bad power play, but the power play has been decent. It hasn't been great, but it's been decent enough. It's been 5-on-5 where we've just gotten destroyed, especially in the third period. We get into the third period with a lead or at least we're in the game, and then you'll give up 3 or 4 5-on-5 goals in the third period. And that's, again, not a recipe for success.
Indeed. So now we head off to the next segment, our best segment, because we do the least amount of talking possible. Shockers, hockey, rock song of the week.
This is a tribute of sorts to this coming Sunday's game against the Cincinnati Cyclones, because these teams really don't like each other. This is a song I use as a fight song at Swander. It is Power Man 5000, Show Me What You Got.
Kicking guns at the door.
And we're back here on Iceman Insights, the Dirty D, the Shocker. We're down here in the cellar of 111 Northwest 4th Street, where we have moved Michael Shockley's supercomputer as it continues to tabulate man games lost to injury. And I think the jinx phrase of last week was Michael Shockley saying, well, it's beginning to slow down a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'll take credit or blame for that.
Blame entirely.
Not only did I say it's beginning to slow down, but I questioned the fact that Springfield hadn't called up Nathan Moon, and then lo and behold, they did. 57 games into the season, we are at 333 man games lost, so 400 is certainly within reach. Last Tuesday, not only did Nathan Moon get called up by Springfield while he was already in Orlando with the Icemen, so you pack for Florida and end up in Massachusetts.
Yeah, I bet you that bag didn't work out too well.
Yeah, no kidding.
My shorts and flip-flops are not working. You just had 36 inches of snow?
Yeah, that's a rough how do you do, but at least you're getting paid more money when you get called up there. That makes it a little more easy to accept, I guess. But on top of Moon getting called up, the Icemen lost Oliver Gabriel. He was hurt in practice on Tuesday, an undisclosed injury. They haven't said what it is. Doesn't sound like it's going to be a long-term deal. He didn't play on the Florida trip, but I would say he's day-to-day because Crom said he was a game-time decision on Saturday. He did not end up playing, but if he was a game-time decision on Saturday, I would guess he's close to returning. So hopefully he won't be out for much longer, but whatever it is, I don't know what the affliction was there. I never did hear one way or the other. So, lost Moon to Springfield, lost Gabriel to injury, and then we did gain someone on Tuesday because the Blues and Peoria Rivermen made a four-player trade with the Nashville Predators and their AHL affiliate, the Milwaukee Admirals. Out of it, only one player affected the Icemen. We got a guy under AHL contract who is Andre Bouvet-Morissette, who had our only goal in Orlando on Wednesday and scored the game winner in the marathon of a shootout. He's a rookie winger. He had been with the Cincinnati Cyclones. He had played 20 games with no goals and two assists. He was plus two with seven penalty minutes. So those numbers don't blow you away, but he certainly has skill in the Quebec Major Junior League in his last year of junior hockey last season. He had 72 points in 63 games. So it could be one of those Dylan Clark situations where the Cyclones just weren't using him in a way that benefits what he brings to the table. So obviously already has a goal here in his first game, which he didn't have a
shootout goal.
Right, and the shootout goal. So he's already got more goal production than he had in 20 games with the Cyclones. So we'll see what he looks like and what he brings to the table. I don't honestly remember really seeing him play when we've played Cincinnati, but perhaps that's because they were using him in a limited role, and that didn't suit what he brings as far as skill and talent. So
I think the important thing is, with Nathan Moon gone at the moment, it gives Cincinnati more reason to hate us and cause all kinds of atrocious fighting and violence against us.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll find out how well he was liked in the locker room and by their wackadoo coach based on how he's treated on Sunday night. Hopefully there won't be any dirty convoy jumping people off the face-off, though. Seen enough of that for one season. But something interesting that comes out of that deal is not only did we gain Bouvet-Morissette, but it kind of closed the door on possibly getting a different player back. We had speculated before that the Rivermen were having issues with being over the veteran limit in the AHL, and because of that, they had been keeping an extra defenseman. Well, one of the player that they gave up in that trade was their captain and one of their veterans, so they are no longer over the veteran limit, which means they don't need to carry, they don't really have an extra defenseman now, since they got rid of Scott Ford, their captain and veteran. So that means that probably closes the door on Brett Ponich possibly coming back. So I don't think we're going to see him again anytime this season, which is unfortunate, but good for him sticking up there. Even if he's not playing a whole lot, at least he's getting some valuable experience and making a lot more money up there. So that was the big trade last week. Then on Wednesday and Thursday, there were no transactions. There were no transactions on Friday either, but as mentioned before, Stefan Del Rivera returned, and Mark Cody and Josh Beaulieu both got hurt. On Saturday the 23rd, Tyler Miller was released after playing five games with no points and a minus four rating for the Icemen.
Sounds like my stat line in the men's league.
Yeah. And as mentioned before, Anton Blomqvist suffered his concussion on Saturday. Then finally on Sunday the 24th, Paul Karpowicz did return to the Icemen from the Rivermen. He had served as their backup for 7 games but never actually played. There, as of when we record this, there's been nothing about Kevin Moore, the emergency backup, being released, but I would imagine that's going to happen either before this airs or shortly after. They might keep him around for a couple days just to give Dayton a couple days off after all of the action that he's seen lately. And then on Monday, not surprising given the nature of the injury, Josh Beaulieu was placed on IR. So that's all the transactions and injuries from the last week or so. I'll let you do the plug. You're so good at the plug.
You want to know anything there is to do about your beloved Evansville Icemen? There's only one place to go. It's not the Courier Press. It is not Chris Phillips, the Warden Maniac Asylum. That's where you go for crybabying. But if you want true information, IcemenManiacs.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can go to the red graphic with the handicap symbol on it, scroll to the last page of that forum, and you will have everything you need to know about the status of our roster.
But fair warning, you probably need a high-speed internet connection to load the entire transaction injury history. Because at this point, I think dial-up, it would time out.
I hope they get Krama at least a secretary next year. If they're not going to give him an assistant coach, and they're not going to give him an assistant GM, maybe just a secretary at least.
Yeah,
unbelievable. Iceman trivia. All right. Hot.
Well, you were hot. You've cooled off a little bit. You got it wrong last week. But you had two in a row right before that. So you're now 3-7. And
that's hot.
This one, you got a shot. This one's not super difficult. This is inspired by the marathon of a shootout on Friday. Last season, the Icemen scored 13 times on 38 shootout attempts. Which player scored the most shootout goals?
I have my answer.
Okie dokie.
My answer is Brian Bicek. Dang it!
Wrong. The correct answer was, believe it or not, Mr. Assist himself, Todd Robinson.
I was thinking about that.
He scored 4 goals on 7 attempts in shootouts last season. Bicek was 2 for 4. Nicholas Lindbergh and Matt Jens were both 2 for 7. And then 3 other players scored 1. Chad Langlais was 1 for 1. John Ronan was 1 for 2. And Sean O'Connor was 1 for 3. So that's the 13, but I don't think Todd would have been my first guess either. I probably would have thought Bicek.
He was
well.
In the top three. I was thinking Lindbergh, Bicek, and Robinson. Yeah. Just because they probably got the most opportunities to go
right
out there.
Yeah, but Todd had 4 of them, so it makes you wonder how much he could score if he actually did pass up the pass every now and then and shot a little more. That's something.
He's got a cannon of a slap shot. I don't think the wrister's quite what it used to be.
Yeah.
But he's definitely a playmaker.
Yeah.
But it's also a little bit easier when you get a breakaway.
Right. True. You don't have to worry about speed, and you can just kind of go in and dilly-dally and figure something out and try to fake the goalie out of his boots, which apparently he's pretty good at.
Yep.
So the trivia kind of leads into a topic for us to discuss a little bit because of the 21-round shootout on Friday, and it's always been, ever, especially since the NHL adopted shootouts, it's been a point of contention and debate among hockey fans. Now, the NHL did not create the idea of a shootout. It was used in the minor leagues for years before the NHL started using it.
I think Europe used it as well.
Yeah. I know, and it was used in some tournament play and stuff like that, because they don't want to play endless overtimes when they have tournaments. So there's a lot of people that love it. There's a lot of people that hate it. I know Dixie Halber is one of them, or Habler, as you say.
Habler.
I think my stance is I don't love them. I don't hate them. I think they're definitely better than the alternative being ties. I hate ties. That was one of the worst things, especially in the NHL, if you're not from an NHL city and you spend your time and money to drive to an NHL game and you sit through 65 minutes of hockey and you leave without a winner or loser. It's very disappointing and deflating. So I think it's definitely better than not having a decision at all. I don't necessarily think it's ideal, but I don't know what you could do differently to have a more satisfying finish. I just don't think endless repeating overtimes until somebody scores is not, you can't do that in the regular season. So I understand why you don't just keep playing overtime forever and ever. I kind of like the idea that the Red Wings and others have kind of proposed of maybe doing a 4-on-4 overtime, and then if it's still scoreless, do a 3-on-3 overtime before you do the shootout. Because with so much open ice, you'd be a lot more likely to decide it at least by some semblance of a team game rather than an individual skills contest, which is essentially what the shootout is. But I don't know. Short of that, I don't really know what else you could do. One thing I do think, I think the shootout in the minors is better because it's 5 rounds. I think the 3-round shootout in the NHL is too short. I like the 5 rounds better. 3 rounds, you could almost get one fluky goal to decide it, whereas 5 rounds, you get a little more depth to it. So I like it better as 5 rounds, but that's kind of my stance. I don't love it. I don't hate it. I think you could tweak some things and maybe do a little more overtime before you get to it, but it's certainly a heck of a lot better than ties. What is your stance?
Well, a little history. The NHL for a long time just went with ties.
Right.
And one of their frustrations was teams are sitting on leads and not trying anymore. And if it's 2-1, 1-0, 3-2, they would basically take the third period off, just get to the red line, chip the puck in deep, set up the defensive strategy, and if we end up giving an empty netter or a pulled goalie extra man at the end of the game, we'll just take the tie. We'll take the point.
Yeah.
And so that's why they brought in the shootout, but teams were still doing it. And it's kind of funny. One of the big teams that people complained about were the Red Wings.
Yeah.
So ironically enough that they want to move away from the shootout.
Yeah, the left wing lock that the Red Wings
exactly,
did.
Exactly.
So
and the New Jersey Devils. And they would take off. All they did was get a lead, and then they shut the game down.
Right.
So they forced, and again, a lot of teams just played for the point. Just
right.
Take 1 point, and that's it. So now with the shootout, I'm a big proponent of the shootout because I hated watching those games where it was obvious that this team was not going to take any risk, any chance. They're just going to get 1 point and be happy with it, get the two, and if they settle for one, that's fine. And now they're forced. 2 points is on the line every night, and I love it. I do not like some people float the three-point concept, that if you win a game in regulation, you should get 3 points. But it isn't about winning a game in regulation. It's about forcing both teams to play all 65 minutes of hockey. Mm-hmm. And you have got to play it all out to score and win, or else you could lose in a shootout. That's the purpose of it. I like it. I think you do bring up an interesting point. Maybe 5 shooters over 3, when you have the Penguins or the Red Wings, and they can send out a Datsyuk and a Zetterberg. Pittsburgh can send out Crosby, Malkin, and Neal, and have maybe it's more balanced, a little bit more exciting if they have to go 5 deep instead of just 3 deep.
Yeah.
That could make for more fun. But then again, the NHL may not want, they don't want games going super long. They want to get these guys rested up and healthy and ready for the next game.
Yeah. Well, and somebody made the point on somewhere on Facebook that the 21-round shootout the Iceman had on Friday, if the ECHL used the NHL 3-round rule, it would have been over after 3 rounds.
Because it was that fifth goal.
Right. The Iceman were up 1-0 after 3 rounds, so that would have only been a 3-round shootout. So, you get more chances for marathon shootouts like that, but I think in general, just because the number of really long shootouts is low to begin with, so I don't think that's so much of a concern. It really doesn't take much more time to add 2 more rounds of a shootout. I mean, when we had the 5-round shootout at the Ford Center a couple weeks ago, the whole thing took about 3.5-4 minutes.
Right, because Hebler had to clock it, right?
Right.
So that the end zone lights would work.
Exactly. So we knew it took less than 5 minutes to do 5 rounds. So you're thinking, especially in the NHL, when they do the dry ice cut, you take 15 minutes to do this dry ice cut, and then the shootout lasts 1.5 minutes. And it seems like it's just, I don't know, it's kind of a premature ending, which you're used to.
Wow, that's the best line of the week. I love it.
I think that's the big thing is I like the idea of making the shootout longer in the NHL. I think the minors have it right where they do the 5 rounds. I haven't really made up my mind as far as doing a 3-on-3 shootout after or overtime after a 4-on-4. I don't think that necessarily is a great idea, but I'm not really opposed to it either. So maybe it's something that the NHL will float to the minors to try, because there's been times when they'll have a proposed rule change that they'll ask the AHL to test out, basically, and then they will kind of see how it goes and decide then whether or not they want to adopt it too. I think a 3-on-3 overtime, there's one thing for sure. It would be exciting.
Yes.
Because 4-on-4 overtime after you watch 60 minutes of 5-on-5 is incredible, the wheeling and dealing and back and forth and end-to-end, and it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, you're just waiting for that one team to pinch that D-man in
and then
for
you get
the 3-on.
Yeah.
And as soon as he does,
you get a 3-on-1 the other way, yep. And it's back and forth. And the 4-on-4 is a lot of fun to watch. And you've certainly seen a lot more goals in overtime with 4-on-4 than we used to with 5-on-5. So maybe that's a good idea, is do the 5-on-5 for regulation, 4-on-4 for 5 minutes, and if it's still tied, do 3-on-3 for 5 minutes, sudden death, and then go to the shootout. So it's something for maybe people to discuss on Facebook, on the Asylum, as I've mentioned before, for anyone who's just listening to this on the air, you can go to Iceman Maniacs on Facebook, and the podcast version of this is posted there every week, so you can comment on that, even if you're not in the Asylum. So plenty of opportunities. Let us know what you think. If you have other ideas for how you can perhaps tweak the overtime/shootout rule and the way ties are broken at the end of regulation, if you got something that's been on your mind, let us know. We'll be happy to discuss it in future episodes.
Definitely. Next up, it was received last week with resounding applause. So here we go. Week number 2, Real Men of Genius.
Yeah, last week we paid tribute to the crazy goalie Chris LeMond with a Real Men of Genius called Mr. Wear a Kilt to a Hockey Game guy. And this week we pay tribute to
because it was his birthday.
Yeah, because it was his birthday on Thursday, I think. Well, the day after that, on Friday, was another longtime Iceman fan's birthday, Drew Campbell, the vice president of the Iceman Maniacs Booster Club. His birthday was last Friday. So this Real Men of Genius is perhaps in his honor, perhaps in a tongue-in-cheek tribute, perhaps a derisive tribute.
Perhaps we don't understand what the term honor means.
Yeah, well, that's true. In his dishonor, this goes.
How about infamy?
Yeah, there we go. This goes back to something that Drew did during an alcohol-fueled rage at Swander a few years back. So. And I have not let him live it down, and others have not as well. So hopefully he'll get a kick out of this. And everyone else who was there to witness it will certainly enjoy this too. So in dishonor of Drew Campbell, this is Real Men of Genius.
Iceman Insights presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Angry Cowbell Chucker Guy.
Mr. Angry Cowbell Chucker Guy.
Your team just lost. The officials stunk. And one player on the opposition really drew your ire.
I think I can take him.
But fear not. You have the perfect outlet for your rage in the form of your Iceman Mini Cowbell.
It's quite the weapon.
Yes. Sweet Revenge is launching a 4-ounce cowbell from 80 feet away at a fully padded man who makes a living being hit by 200-pound men.
I showed him who's boss.
So we salute you, O Rider of Wrongs. Whenever there's an injustice to correct, we won't call 911. Instead, we'll call you.
Mr. Angry Cowbell Chucker Guy.
IcemanManiac.com, WYIR. Evansville, Indiana.
Now Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley.
And Daddy.
And here we are with Iceman Insights. It's all right. We're just talking, hanging out.
Hanging out with Ivy.
Michael Shockley, the Dirty D. And now the Brian Patafi Tweet of the Week.
As we do every week, we remind you, you can follow Iceman Athletic Trainer Brian Patafi on Twitter. His handle is B-Patafi, B-P-A-T-I. Let's try that again. B-P-A-T-A-F-I-E. And this one goes back a few weeks, but I thought it was funny, so it's worth mentioning. Brian Patafi tweeted, and I quote, "Somebody called me Two-Faced today. Really? If I was, why would I be wearing the one I have on now?" End quote.
There he is.
I think I'm going to have to remember that, because anytime somebody tells me I'm Two-Faced, I'm going to say that too. Like, really? I would pick this one?
He's got a doozy today, but last week, I'll share this one because I don't think you'll ever use it. Because you don't speak Swedish, as far as I know. But
very little, no.
he said, Meatballs. I've got nothing to say, so I'm just going to retweet what Antoine Blomqvist tweeted. So he retweeted this whole Swedish something or other.
Hmm.
I hope it said something like, this Iceman trainer is a D-bag or something like that. That'd be hilarious.
Well, I have to run it, through Google Translate. We just introduced Ivy to a new term. Good parenting, Mr. Benigni.
What can you do? Upcoming games.
We have, believe it or not, only six home games remain, as we said earlier, and two of them are coming up. Starting tomorrow night, the Icemen host the Toledo Walleye at 7:15. It's the last time the Walleye come to Evansville this season, and it will be our second Star Wars night of the season.
In honor of Kenny Baker.
He's in honor of goals R2-D2.
He's hot.
Yeah. So that's Thursday, and then Saturday, the Icemen, it's a home-and-home. They go up to Toledo on Saturday, play the Walleye at 6:05. And then on Sunday, we come back home, and the Icemen host the Cincinnati Cyclones at 7:15. It is a late start for a Sunday. I believe there's another event during the day at the Ford Center, so that's why it's 7:15 instead of 5. So make sure you don't show up at 5, or you're going to be waiting for a while. I assume doors will open at 6 like usual for a 7:15 start. So it is, like I said, the last time the Cyclones come. It is Indy 500 night, which I think they're supposed to have a show car outside the Iceman office. I don't know any details about that. They haven't really given any details about that. If it's anything like NASCAR night was, there's a show car outside the office, and there's no mention of it the rest of the night. So we'll see. I think they did say something about they would have some prizes, including possibly Indy 500 tickets, which if that's the case, that's really cool because Indy 500 tickets are not cheap.
Yep.
And it's an awesome event. If anyone hasn't been, I highly recommend it. I grew up in Indy and never went to the race. I went to practice and qualifying a million times, and a few years ago I went to the race for the first time, and it's incredible. It's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing, and to walk around that facility when there's 300,000 people, and the most sobering moment for me was when they do the military tribute and the moment of silence before the race. To hear that many people get that quiet is amazing. Hmm. So, if you haven't been to the Indy 500, you might be able to win tickets on Sunday. That's cool. It's also Subway Family Night. It's the last one of those this year where you can get the ticket, popcorn, soda, and a T-shirt for $12. So that's a heck of a deal. So, again, you can get those. I think the Subway tickets, if you want to get a group of them for 10 or more, you can get them through the Iceman office. Otherwise, if it's less than 10, you have to get them through the Ford Center box office or Ticketmaster.com, where a $12 ticket turns into $22 after all their fees. We were actually looking the other night at the Disney on Ice show that's coming to the Ford Center in March. And they have a $10 ticket is $17.05 after all their fees.
Nice.
It's ridiculous.
Yep.
But that's why you don't buy them on Ticketmaster unless you really like paying more than you need to.
Yep. Two things to remember. Thursday, we want to try and do that standing ovation. Great idea by Troy Seibert.
Mm-hmm.
To congratulate our guys for working through sickness and injury and
call-ups
and dysentery and everything else that affected that club when they were down in Florida. And
Terry Ficarelli cooties.
Yes. And then, Sunday night, your Swander Development League, the C League, will be playing after the game. So the yellow team versus the red team.
Featuring amusement park regular Grace Barrett. Is she going to be?
Yes, Grace Barrett will be on the ice. And don't know if, trying to think if there's any other connections we have, but I don't think we do. But yeah, Grace Barrett will be on the ice. Her second time in her career when she played against Memorial, Castle Knights versus Memorial last year for the city championship game.
Is that an official full-length game, or is it like a shortened?
They're going to do 15 minutes running clock. So once they get out there, it'll go pretty quick.
Do we know who's officiating?
No, we do not know who's officiating.
Hmm. That's unfortunate. It won't be you?
I may be packing up my jerk brother and moving him to another house because it's a new year. So we do this every year. So this time, at least, he's not moving from state to state, just from one house to another.
So you have a nomadic member of the family, too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have an uncle like that. Like, every time you hear from him, it's from a different state all of a sudden. Last time I heard, he was in New Mexico, and now all of a sudden he's living in New Jersey. And it's like, how do you get from New Mexico to New Jersey? That's pretty random.
Well, every time I hear from my brother, it's, hey, we're moving. Can you be down here?
Yeah.
Can you help me with this big TV armoire that you've moved 17 times?
You need to start charging for that service.
Well, they do feed me well, so what can you do?
Guess that makes
so, sense. So, yeah, I do not know whether I will be in town or not. But any regardless of whether I am there in presence or not, the game will go on. So
you mean the world moves on without you?
Barely.
Don't
tell my wife.
Ah, gotcha.
So, quiet. Lippy in the press box over there.
The peanut gallery here in the studio
tonight.
Out
of control. Final thoughts.
Final thoughts. Did want to plug this Saturday, there will be an Iceman Maniacs Booster Club meeting out at the Mission Viejo Apartments Clubhouse on the west side of Evansville. We're having a meeting at 5 o'clock, followed by a viewing party for the Iceman Road game at Toledo at 6. So all are welcome, even if you're not currently a member of the Booster Club. Technically, once you're there, you have to join in order to be at the party because it is a Booster Club meeting. But you can come. If you're not a member of the Booster Club and you want to join the Booster Club, you can come out. It's $5 per person or $10 for a family, and that's your annual membership for the Booster Club. So we will be meeting at 5 again, and the viewing party is at 6. There's going to be food and beverages and should be a fun time. So everyone who's already in the Booster Club, hopefully we'll see you there. Anyone who's not in the Booster Club, if you want to get in, come join us. Mission Viejo, 5 o'clock Friday or Saturday, and then the viewing party is at 6. And anytime if you want more information about the Booster Club, go to IcemanManiacs.com. There's a page that has all the information about what the club does and how you can join and all that good jazz. It's a lot of fun. We do a lot of events, and it does a lot of good stuff for the players as far as providing fruit and food for road trips and things like that. So Booster Club meeting Saturday at 5.
Maybe you guys need 5. To add those flu masks for the next time they go to Florida
no
or something like that.
Yeah, get some hazmat suits sponsored by the Booster Club. So, hopefully we'll see lots of people out there at 5 o'clock on Saturday. Should be a lot of fun.
He is Michael Shockley, the senior writer, webmaster for IcemanManiacs.com, also the vice president of Offbeat Shenanigans. I am the Dirty D, and the loudmouth in the other room is the Ivy Spivey. Thank you all for listening in on 96.9 FM, WYIR, the music bomb.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.